You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Happy official first day of training camp, mostly individual workouts this week, I believe, until we get to the weekend. But there was a bit of Wolves news that broke late on Monday evening that we'll talk about today. A signing of an actual well above average NBA player that the Wolves will undoubtedly give a chance to make the roster and hopefully give a chance to be in the rotation. So most of the show today, we'll be talking about the signing of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who is the exact type of player that the Timberwolves have not really had and have desperately needed for a very, very long time. Also, I want to talk, I guess related to that would be lineups. We've kind of been dancing around that a little bit over the past couple of weeks, but John Krasinski at The Athletic had an article out debating some different lineup types. So I want to kind of breeze through that and talk a little bit about some different lineup options that head coach Ryan Saunders will have at his disposal this year. Before we do that, though, as always, a quick reminder here off the top to please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, really wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, let's talk Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So RHJ was a first-round pick traded to the Brooklyn Nets immediately after being drafted, and he spent four seasons with the Nets. He is really the prototypical multi-positional defender, which is extremely valuable, always has been, but especially in today's NBA with the high frequency of pick and rolls and kind of positionless basketball in a sense, a lot more small ball lineups. He can comfortably guard easily threes and fours. He's a well above average defender, can switch on to twos and ones comfortably. And, frankly, with the way that some teams are playing now, I mean, if the Wolves play the Rockets, Hollis-Jefferson can play center and is a good enough rebounder for his size and his position. He's only 6'6", but he's got a wingspan of 7'1". And for all those reasons, and he's also a really savvy player. He's still in his prime. He's 25. He's about to turn 26 in early January. And I wrote about him at Dunking with Wolves. We hadn't really talked about him much on the show, but over at Dunking with Wolves, a couple of weeks ago, actually, I wrote about him as one of the final four options still on the free agent market that would be affordable for the Wolves and they could fill out the roster with him. This was after I did see, hat tip to Darren Wolfson of KSTP. Doogie does a great job. He's getting a lot of credit on social media for tweeting out some workout videos earlier, I guess over the weekend for Hollis-Jefferson before he was signed by Minnesota. But actually back a couple of weeks ago, week and a half ago, November 21st, he tweeted out, why not mention RHJ in response to a tweet about, different guys the Wolves should look at. He said the Wolves have interest in Hollis-Jefferson. So then I wrote about him for Dunkey with Wolves, and I'll read just a portion of what I said. This is my writing from about a week and a half ago. I said, Hollis-Jefferson consistently turns in above average defensive metrics at 6'6" with a 7'2" wingspan. He checks the boxes in terms of positional flexibility and switchability. He should be able to lock down threes and most fours, fitting what the Wolves are trying to do on defense. The biggest issue with RHJ is his lack of long-range shooting ability. He's a career 21.3% three-point shooter and has taken only 0.7 threes per game across his four seasons in the league. Still, he is more of a game-changer defensively than, and the example I give is Trevion Graham was at the start of last season. The theory was the Wolves could live with Graham's lack of shooting ability in exchange for defense, but he wasn't consistently good enough on that end of the floor either. Hollis-Jefferson was a big part of the Nets' rotation in the 18-19 season when they made the playoffs, and D'Angelo Russell was an all-star. He played 21 minutes per game for that Nets team and primarily came off the bench. And then this last season, he played for Toronto. And Toronto won, 55 games this year, I think? 53 games this year. They went 53-19. Hollis-Jefferson played in 60 games, started only six, and averaged 19 minutes a game. But he was a major part of the rotation of one of the league's best teams this season, of a team that surprised a lot of people, being dominant and winning 53 games despite losing Kawhi Leonard. And Hollis-Jefferson was a big part of that. He mostly played the four this season in Toronto, but again, extremely switchable. He played more three earlier in his career, but he's actually progressively shot the ball a little bit worse the last couple of years from deep, but he does so many other things well. And again, switchable defenders is what the Wolves want. It's what they need. You have D'Angelo Russell at the one, Karl Anthony Towns at the five. Both are below average defenders. I think there's still hope for Towns to be an average defender because he's smart, long, athletic enough has good instincts, all those things, if they can figure out to get him, how to get him to play hard consistently. And also if everything clicks in this new scheme for Towns, which is year two now of David Vanterpool's scheme, Towns can still be an average-ish defender, but he's got to prove that he can do that. So Russell and Towns at the 2, 3, and 4, you have to have at least a couple guys that are above average defenders if you want to be competitive on that end of the floor. The Wolves now have three players like that on the roster. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Josh Okogie, and Ricky Rubio are all above average NBA defenders. They're very rarely going to share the floor together because the other thing they all have in common is they're not above average, consistent above average three-point shooters. Okogie and Hollis-Jefferson are well below average. Rubio turned in a pretty solid 36% three-point shooting season last year, and if that remains true, then that you become a little bit more flexible there. But the idea is that you have one of them on the floor at all times. Maybe you can get away with two of them, especially if one of them is Rubio and he's truly catching and shooting at above league average, you know, 33, 34, 35, 36%. Then you have either Hollis Jefferson or Okogie on the floor. And Hollis Jefferson's bigger than Okogie. He can guard fours probably a little bit better than Okogie. But it gives you that dynamic and that the Wolves have been missing, that they desperately need that edge on defense as well. Ed Davis, I should also mention, is an above average defender, but obviously a big man who's going to play probably mostly the five behind Towns. I also should mention on the reporting of this contract. So it was first reported by, let me see, who was it initially? It was, I believe, Chris Haynes. Yes, Chris Haynes of Yahoo initially reported the Hollis Jefferson signing, and then John Krasinski tweeted out about just 11 minutes later that it's a training camp non-guaranteed one-year deal for the Wolves. So we'll talk about the roster here in a minute, but the Wolves now still have that roster flexibility at the end of the roster. They still have one open spot for a guaranteed contract. So Hollis Jefferson's not guaranteed anything. And my guess is this was kind of mutual in a sense, because if they come to training camp and RHJ feels like he's not going to see the minutes that he wants to see in Minnesota, there's no doubt in my mind he'll have other options. I mean, this is a guy who's an above average defender, multi-positional defender, has played a key role in the rotation of a couple of playoff teams last couple of years. And again, a 53-win team just last year, he played 19 minutes a game. So what I want to do next is actually John Hollinger, who of course co-hosts the Hollinger and Duncan podcast right here on the Locked On Network. Subscribe if you haven't already. He also writes for The Athletic, and he wrote a bit where he basically ranked free agents by position and then based on their value and what they're worth. And Hollis Jefferson is an absolute steal based on that. So I want to read an excerpt from that, what Hollinger said, and then also what Hollinger thinks Hollis Jefferson is worth on what he should have gotten in free agency. And if he remains with the Wolves, it sure looks like it'll be a veteran minimum contract. So I want to talk about that next. Before we get into it, though, let's talk about our great friends at Built Go. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Built Go every single day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's not just a workout gel, though. It's like a 5-hour energy, but without the same crash feeling, and it's natural, so it's better for your body. Really, it's like drinking a Monster, but with only a third the caffeine and yet better results. Again, if it's a mental or physical wall, you can break through with Built Go. It's easy to take in only 1.5-ounce packages. You can put it in your pocket, throw it in your backpack, your gym bag, whatever, your golf bag. It comes in 3 delicious flavors, peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. It combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is a fast-absorbing gel, so it gets into your system fast and it's easy on your stomach. It's also loaded with beta-alanine, vitamin B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine, as well as vitamin B6 and vitamin B12. Collagen protein also promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health, and it literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED. You'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. All right, talking about future shows here this week, of course, training camp kicked off today. So we'll be talking training camp all week as we start to get reports on individual workouts. There's actually a press conference this morning. I haven't had the chance to watch it yet, but Ricky Rubio and Ed Davis were both introduced. Of course, no fans or anything like that. A little different than the first time Ricky Rubio was introduced in Minnesota with the airport and the fanfare and you know, David Kahn and everything that happened back in, what was it, 2011? But at any rate, 2010, I guess. Later this week, though, we're going to talk more about training camp. We're going to talk more about lineups and also what the Wolves are going to do with that 15 spot. So make sure to tune in all week again, daily, Monday through Friday. So 3 more shows still coming up this week. So I mentioned roster fit and the possibility of Hollis Jefferson having other options and maybe wanting to give himself a little bit of an out if it doesn't look like he's going to get the playing time that he wants in Minnesota. I should mention that Darren Wolfson, again, who was pushing for this signing, talking about this and tweeting out highlights a few days ago, just tweeted out this afternoon. This is on Tuesday. He said, just had a nice chat with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. He was on the way to the airport to fly to Minnesota. He's talked to Ryan Saunders, is pumped, said he's close with D'Lo and Davis. And Davis in particular said he talks to Ed Davis very often and that Davis is a confidant. So, you know, those connections are undeniable. I didn't even mention this off the top, but we, just like we should have seen Ed Davis coming as a potential Timberwolf in the very near future, Hollis-Jefferson played 4 years in Brooklyn. He played for Pablo Prigioni, who is the offensive coordinator there. He played with Ed Davis. He played with D'Angelo Russell. Look at the other, you know, last year the Wolves brought in Travion Graham, Shabazz Napier, Alan Crabb, all guys who had been through Brooklyn. And remember, the Wolves director of global scouting, or actually that was his former title, Gianluca Pascucci, was the director of global scouting for the Brooklyn Nets. He is now one of the Timberwolves' assistant general managers, and he's also the general manager of the Iowa Wolves of the G League. So he's another member who a member of the front office who was a member of the Brooklyn Nets front office. There's plenty of ties there as well. And again, Hollis-Jefferson and the way that he plays is, I can't say this enough, is exactly the type of player the Wolves needed to bring in. The only blemish is that lack of a 3-point shooting game, which is a pretty good transition to, I want to talk about what John Hollinger said. Hollinger, of course, at The Athletic, and also of Hollinger and Duncan, put out this article. This was just a couple of weeks ago, NBA free agency rankings by position. So he did an article for every position. So for power forward, he ranked, obviously, you know, Anthony Davis as max. He has a tier two, which is more than the mid-level, but less than the max. So Danilo Gallinari leads that list. Davis Bertans next, Paul Millsap, Derek Jones Jr., who of course was a target for the Timberwolves, and the Wolves were one of three teams he was deciding between: Minnesota, Sacramento, and Portland. And it sounds like Minnesota was second on his list after Portland. And then he has mid-level guys, Jabari Parker being one. And then the only other mid-level guy listed is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and he has his value listed. This is John Hollinger. So, you know, 5-6 year member of the Memphis Grizzlies, ran their basketball operations department. He has Hollis-Jefferson worth almost 11.875 million. This is a guy who just signed a non-guaranteed training camp deal, and it was still on the free agent market 10 days into free agency. And I'll just read what Hollinger said. Of course, this is The Athletic, so if you have a subscription, go check it out. If you don't, I'll read part of it. I can't read everything. But Hollinger says, as with Derek Jones, Hollis-Jefferson's lack of playoff run will likely drag down his market far below this number. So he's acknowledging he's not actually going to be worth 11.9 on the market, but he should be. As with Jones and Parker, the numbers suggest he's been very effective the past 2 years, despite his inability to convert from distance. He lists that he can't shoot from the perimeter, 21.3%, numbers that I already mentioned. And then he says he still manages to get stuff done at both ends. Hollis-Jefferson is a quick, switchable, active defender who can capably check positions 1 through 4 with a quirky off-the-dribble game and a knack for playmaking. He gave out 4.5 assists per 100 possessions last season and 4.1 per 100 possessions over his 5-year career. He's good at posting up switches, draws fouls, and shoots 74% at the line. He talks about an acceptable rebounding rate, which I mentioned earlier as well. And then he says it's easy for teams to turn up their nose at the shooting piece, and he understands that, but says that he was a rotation staple for a 53-19 team, and he would be shocked if he gets $11.9 million in free agency. Hollinger says he'll be lucky to get half that. And if he goes for half that, he'll be one of the best bargains of the offseason. So Hollinger says he's worth 11.9. He says if he gets between 5 and 6 million, he'll be one of the best bargains of the offseason. And the Wolves just got him for what sure looks like it would be the veterans minimum. Now, obviously that means he didn't have too many better options out there, or he would have taken more money elsewhere. So, you know, but sometimes teams miss things, and there's teams that probably have full rotations. I mean, the Wolves are one of them, right? I mean, the Wolves think that they have a pretty full roster. They haven't even brought back Jordan McLaughlin yet. And it would be understandable if they just, you know, brought in Jordan McLaughlin, if they brought in another G League type guy to try and fill out the roster and find a diamond in the rough. But why not sign a guy who's 25, one of the better combo forwards in the game in terms of defensive, you know, switchability and kind of just all around, again, take the 3-point shot is the only thing, everything else. And this is not the same thing. I mentioned Travion Graham earlier, just as, you know, I was writing about how that was like kind of the reasoning behind Graham was, if he can defend well enough, we can figure this out. But Graham was a wing. Jefferson's a 3/4. He can guard both positions. He doesn't have to shoot threes. He can do everything else at a well enough level, passing the ball, rebounding the ball, playmaking just a little bit as a passer. You know, he's not going to put the ball on the floor and score a lot, but he can. So he can do all, he can be, I talked actually about in the Duncan with Wolves article from 10 days ago or so, that that he ran, he was a frequent cutter in the Brooklyn Nets offense. I didn't pull the numbers from Toronto last year because I was trying to find some correlation between Hollis Jefferson and D'Angelo Russell a couple of years ago in Brooklyn. But his ability as a cutter, as a kind of a third option for being a playmaker, all those things on top of the defense make him a valuable player. And it would be, frankly, I would be shocked. I know it's a non-guaranteed contract, but the Wolves have to find a way to get him into the rest. If they're serious about trying to make the playoffs this year, and it certainly seems like they are, this is the type of player who elevates you from, you know, maybe it's the 23rd best defense in the league. Single-handedly, he's going to drag you into the teens if he gets 20, 25 minutes a game. He's that good of a defender. He was in the top 10 in defensive real plus minus each of the last couple of years. That's the ESPN metric that, again, is not the end-all be-all, but is a solid indicator in terms of perimeter defense, if you're going to boil it down to one metric. So needless to say, the Ronnie Hollis Jefferson signing, I absolutely love it. It's a massive steal. Hollinger even tweeted about it not that long ago, it being just a massive bargain, one of the best of the offseason. And I would be really surprised if Gerson Rosas in the front office let him go without giving him an opportunity to contribute to the rotation this year. All right, let's talk about the rotation, actually. That's a perfect segue into discussing kind of the starting lineup, different options. I'll reference the John Krasinski article at The Athletic, but I want to just talk through what I think is the most likely scenario and what I think the Wolves should do rotation-wise here coming up next. All right, before we talk about the rotation, a quick reminder. I mentioned Hollinger and Duncan earlier. And if you want to get basketball smart, it starts with listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're very lucky to have John Hollinger and Nate Duncan. NBA analytics pioneer and front office insider John Hollinger joins Dunked On podcast host Nate Duncan to bring you scouting reports, game breakdowns, and salary cap analysis. Subscribe to Hollinger and Duncan today, wherever you get podcasts. All right, now let's talk about the Wolves rotation and the likely direction that they go starting lineup-wise, the likely direction that Ryan Saunders goes. So I mentioned John Krasinski's article that posted on Tuesday, and he kind of goes through the most likely scenarios and then some less likely ones. So the most obvious starting lineup that he lists as playing it safe would be D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Josh Okogie at the three, Juancho Hernan Gomez, and Karl-Anthony Towns. The other one that he lists that I think is likely involves Ricky Rubio in the starting lineup. He's got Rubio, Russell, Anthony Edwards, Juancho Hernan Gomez, and Karl-Anthony Towns is the starting lineup. I actually think that will be the opening night starting lineup, but quite possibly with one small tweak. And actually, my permutation of this lineup, I don't think he's got listed. And I'm scrolling through it again to make sure I didn't miss it. But I actually think the Wolves might give it a shot. And perhaps it depends on matchups. And this may be the sort of thing where they rotate two, three guys, you know, through on the wing to find the best combination depending on matchup. So he's got Russell, Rubio, so I guess Rubio at the one, Russell at the two, Edwards at the three, Hernan Gomez and Towns. The problem with that is that Beasley's getting paid however many millions of dollars, $60 million over 4 years that he's now getting paid. Pretty unlikely he comes off the bench. Now, you can make the same argument for Rubio, who's getting paid $17 million this year and more than that next year. So somebody's got to come off the bench. My gut feel is that the starting lineup on opening night, and this could change, it might be different in game two than it is in game one, but I'm going to put it out there. I think it'll be Rubio, Russell, Malik Beasley at the three, Hernan Gomez, and Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't think they'll start Anthony Edwards in the first game of his career. It wouldn't surprise me if he was starting at some point this season. But I do think that they're going to try and bring him along and then play him with Rubio on the second unit for stints, and then perhaps even go I think they're going to try and have either Rubio or Russell on the floor at all times, which I'm sure is the holdup. One of the main holdups in getting Jordan McLaughlin back is they probably aren't going to be able to guarantee him minutes, because if you're starting Russell and Rubio together and then you kind of stagger their minutes, you know, maybe it's crunch time and the start of both halves that they're playing together, but then your other, whatever, call it 36, 38 minutes of the game, actually more than that, 32, 34 minutes of the game, you want one or the other on the floor. There's only going to be a few minutes here and there, depending on foul trouble, where you're going to have time, you're going to have the availability for a third point guard to play. And so maybe it's some sort of, you know, maybe they have Anthony Edwards initiate some offense with the second unit, like they did with Jarrett Culver last year. More likely they have Culver do it. And maybe even Rondae Hollis Jefferson gets the opportunity to run some point like the Wolves did with James Johnson last year out of necessity. It's unclear what they're going to do to try and keep Russell and Rubio from getting you know, too much over 32, 34 minutes a game and yet still play them together. So I guess that would be the other argument for not starting Rubio, is that then you can ensure they're on the court together and maybe they close the game together. So you have Rubio with the defensive element plus the playmaking, and D'Angelo Russell's a scoring threat. There's a lot of different options that the Wolves have to kind of sift through. So I think the next most likely starting lineup is the one that John mentioned in his article, which would be Beasley coming off the bench as your de facto sixth man, and you're starting Rubio, Russell, and Anthony Edwards. And then Beasley comes in and he's your instant offense, and he's still going to play 30 plus minutes, and he's still going to squeeze the trigger 10 times a game on three-pointers or whatever it ends up being. And he can play with Rubio, he can play with Russell, you could play him at the three if you want to, if you need scoring. Or Josh Okogie then becomes your energy defender off the bench as well. I don't think Okogie starts this year. I think they bring him off the bench as kind of a lockdown type defender and bringing energy in transition, bringing that element to the floor that he's really good in transition and he's a really good defender. Those are his strengths. And so I think that that will be his role this year. I don't think he starts. There's also the possibility they don't start Hernan Gomez. They do something else with the four. It's not, you know, Anthony Edwards isn't big enough to play the four, so they're not going to, you know, slide everybody down a slot again. There were some ideas thrown out by John Krasinski. He mentions Jake Lehman at the four. He mentions Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the four. It's possible. It wouldn't surprise me if at some point this year, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson starts a game at the four. But I would imagine that Hernan Gomez signed to be the primary starting four, at least at the start of the season. We all know that the four is the primary spot the Wolves are going to be looking to improve. I mean, they're set at the one, Russell Rubio. They're set at, on the wing now with Beasley, Anthony Edwards. And, you know, they've still got Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie. They're set on the wing. They're set at the five, obviously, with Towns, Davis, Naz Reid. It's the four where they could still use a little bit of an upgrade. And Hernan Gomez should be somewhat tradable. He actually will be very useful as a bench rotational player if they do acquire a star four to play in front of him, or you know, somebody who's at least seen as kind of the final piece of what could be a big three or big four, depending on what you think of Anthony Edwards. But at the start of the season, I think Hernan Gomez is your starting four. And so it's a little bit in flux, but at the moment, I would put my money on Edwards coming off the bench and Beasley starting. Perhaps long-term that flips because you want the bigger, more physical, in theory, better rebounder, better defender in Edwards in the starting lineup and Beasley as your instant offense off the bench. I'm dubious that that happens from day one. I don't know that you pay Beasley that money and then tell him, hey, you're not even starting opening night. That's not the only reason, because I also think you want to be careful with Edwards and it'd be, I would be willing to bet, and I haven't looked this up, one of the, maybe the only time in the last 20 years that the number one overall pick wasn't in the starting lineup on opening night. Maybe I'm off on that, but I mean, this isn't baseball where your number one pick doesn't play for 4 years. I mean, typically the number one overall pick starts. And so that would be unique, but that's my prediction as of right now, before we get into training camp, that Edwards comes off the bench, Beasley starts with Rubio and Russell, and the Wolves just run small and fast. And then they have these defenders on the bench that can come in crunch time if they need to. Okogie, Edwards is a bigger body. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, if he makes the team, all those guys will be options to help lock down at the end of games. Watching the rotation over the next 10 days, you know, what teams are running together in training camp, if we get a peek at that, and certainly the preseason opener, which is just a week from Saturday. So I don't know, like, what is that? 11 days, something like that away. We'll get a sense for where the Wolves are looking in terms of the rotation, who's starting, who's coming off the bench. Will Hollis-Jefferson make the team? It's exciting. The Wolves are still adding strong pieces potentially to the rotation, like a Hollis-Jefferson. And there's guys that have just kind of almost been forgotten about because they haven't been involved in transactions, like a Jake Lehman or a Josh Okogie. What are they going to bring to the table? It's certainly a better group of talent, significantly better group of talent than 12 months ago, and far better than the middle of the season last year too. I know that Hernan Gomez and Beasley were on the roster, but that group of players with Towns, with Russell, they were never really healthy together. And so to have everybody together healthy, a deeper bench, all those things matter. And it's extremely exciting to see it all finally come together. And we haven't had basketball, Timberwolves basketball, in 9 months. And so we I think collectively as a fan base has a right to be very excited this year, whether or not it leads to a playoff berth or simply, we haven't even really talked about this on the show, but remember, it's not just 8 playoff teams this year. There's going to be play-in games all the way up to seed number 10. The Wolves were 14th last year. So they don't need to jump 6 spots. They need to jump 4 spots to get into the conversation, to have an opportunity to win 2 games, to get into the playoffs, to win the right to play in a playoff series. And this team, I think, is built to at least be in that conversation. And we'll get more into predictions as we get closer. The season preview for the Locked On NBA Network is coming soon as well. So keep an eye out for that. All right, that's all we have for today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast. Of course, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Of course, we'll be back daily this week, Monday through Friday. So three more shows this week. So be sure to check back for any updates on training camp and anything else that goes down throughout the week. So we'll catch you then. And if you're so inclined, help us out with a review on Apple, on iTunes. That definitely helps us get in front of more folks. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.